Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 344 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I have like an eye goop problem. I don't know what's happening. I think my oily beard hair is growing up and getting into my eyes.
Oh, that would be terrible. You're like Medusa.
Yes. My beard hair is meddling with my eyes.
Oh, my goodness. Beard metal.
Beard hair metal.
Mm-hmm.
I do like seeing people that I haven't seen in quite some time with my beard and then being genuinely shocked at how terrible I look.
Oh, they're like Grizzly Joe is here.
I wish.
Oh.
He got all the chicks.
Barely. See what they did there? Barely.
Ugh.
So other than your eye gunk, is everything okay?
Nah, you know, I'm doing good. The weather upsets me.
What? There was tornado warnings the other day. Where I live, there was lots of wind. My garbage cans are in Oz. It's all good.
Perfect May, Pennsylvania weather.
That's right. You don't like it? Wait 10 minutes. It'll change.
Oh.
Anything else new and exciting then?
No. I think one of these days I need a phone, but that sounds like a dreadful thing to do.
Oh, because then what happens to your puzzle warriors?
Well, that was part of it. I learned today how it can be moved, even if it fails with whatever you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the thought of going to one of those places where you get the phones,
right,
and having to deal with people just sounds like a nightmare to me.
I got a guy you could go see.
Nope.
Fancy gentleman at a reputable business by the initials BB.
Well, first of all, the first time that I shopped there since my kerfuffle with them is when we were going to have the snowstorm of death.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife forced us to go there and buy a converter. I think we talked about it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
That we could plug plugs into a USB that was connected to my jump box that I have in my car.
Right. And you use them like never.
No, we haven't used it yet. It's still in the package in our kitchen.
Well, that's called preparation.
And I said, we should return this and get your money back because I didn't want to spend my money on it, on that place.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll, you know what? When he gets me my NES Classic, I'll go and get my phone from him. Oh.
Oh, boy. Oh. Grapes that are sour.
So what do we got to talk about comic books? Enough about me and my phone.
Mm-hmm. Some tick news. Also speculation on a Marvel book coming up and who would be writing it.
Right, and I brought this in because of the crossover to a recent appearance that Todd made elsewhere.
Oh, I'm getting out. I'm getting out and about. Also a Kickstarter. A new streaming service that's bringing back a show that people lobbied to bring back, and also a show that disappeared. We didn't know where it was going to go. And Comixology adds something from Marvel. Also,
yeah.
Also, we have con news, free digital book sales, what we read last week, which includes Flash 21, infamous Iron Man, Scarlet Spider, and, as a request, Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 50.
Well, it's really number 25, but we'll get into that as well. Comics are confusing, everyone.
Wibbly-wobbly-timey-wimey.
Nope.
What we're looking forward to this week are... Todd and Joe have issues with Flash 182. And also at the end of the show, we also have more Flash talk with... The Flash coming back on TV, spoiler-filled talk.
Want my opinions on Barry's wig? It's going to be the very last thing that we discuss.
What? Are you saying there's hot wig talk on this show?
Oh, my goodness. It's going to be something. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to hold my breath till the end of the show.
Okay. Hold your breath in one hand. Is that how that goes?
Something like that.
So let's kind of go all over the place with this, because it is a lot of newsy stuff here. So just the other day, Marvel books are now appearing on Comixology's Unlimited service. Marvel, of course, has their own Unlimited service where you pay a fee monthly and you get their entire back catalog. I haven't checked it out in quite some time, so I don't know how back catalog it is. I knew the last time there was like weird holes in the back catalog, but apparently they've fixed most of that. Now, I don't think DC is in Comixology Unlimited, but every other publisher is, for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like, all of Image is in there, all of Dark Horse, all of Oni, Archie, IDW, etc. Whereas Marvel just recently added some select picks to it. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting because, you know, one, how is this stuff chosen? Two, how much more is going to get added? And three, the fact that Comixology's thing is only $7 a month, where Marvel's is $9 or $10 a month. Are they just going to kind of push everything over there?
Which I would hope so, because it seems like, you know, like we've always talked about getting it all under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, that could be a monopoly, but it makes it easier. It's kind of like the way I hate all these, like, you know, TV. It's like, oh, you got Hulu for these shows and you got Netflix. It's like, it's all too much. I just want my one-stop shop for digital comics, and I would get more digitally.
Now, the other thing is what they have available, at least limited so far, they've only got about 60 items, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. From the Marvel side of things, and most of it is classic trades. And when I say classic trades, I mean new classics, like the first Fraction and Aha Hawkeye, the first Civil War, the first trade of Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, but then you've got like the big gun classics, like your Dark Phoenix Saga, your Iron Man Demon in a Bottle, your, you know, things of that nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly all trades, but then they have a couple selected first issues from 2 months ago. X-Men Prime, Rocket Raccoon, Darth Maul, Gamora, Iron Fist, and America, the America Chavez book. Now, the thing with that is, those books, 2 months ago, are on the Comixology side of Marvel. Those books don't show up on the Marvel side of Marvel's Unlimited for 6 months.
Okay.
So that's an interesting little feature there, because it's not everything, but it's, you know, a select hit of some of the bigger gun new number ones from 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to be very interesting to see what this leads to.
How it all shakes out in the end.
Right. I'm excited about that.
Me too.
So speaking of streaming services and so forth, it appears as though, finally, DC is going to be getting its own streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
But not the comics, it would seem. It seems to be for everything. Like, Warner is going to have their own separate streaming service for their TV and movies, and there's speculation that DC TV shows that, as Todd mentioned at the top of the show, that either kind of disappeared from discussion, like the live-action Titans TV show, or the new season of Young Justice that they're filming, recording, drawing now, are going to appear there.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, is interesting, because can you imagine if DC had its own place to do TV shows? I mean, I know they're on the CW now, but I don't know, bring Constantine back. I'm still on the bring Constantine back, but I don't know. I think it's a cool idea. I never watched Young Justice, so I know you always try to get me on that boat, but I don't know. I like this idea, but it also scares me because it's another comic thing I might have to look into, because as we always say, we're old school DC fans here.
Right.
And the stuff that they could do there. Like, oh my God, like, I would love to see a Justice League International show or a Starman show, anything. I don't know. Just the realm of possibilities. And then how it can all cross over because it's under one roof or completely separate. I don't know. I just it just boggles the mind at what they can do.
It makes me wonder what Warner Brothers existing streaming rights look like? Like, where are all the Warner Brothers stuff now? Or is it nowhere?
I think it's all under Warner Brothers roof. It's just who has the distribution rights. Do you know what I mean? I'm 99% sure that they own all the rights to their characters in outside comics. You know, it's not like Marvel where Paramount has this and Universal has that and Fox has this. It's Warner Brothers owns all of that, but it's just like, oh, because the way it was, like, we could just bring the actor who was on Constantine on NBC to CW for an episode, or we can bring Supergirl before Supergirl was on CW on CBS. Just bring them over. I mean, it's like, I look at it as they probably just have you buy the rights to distribute it for a while. And then that's what Marvel wants to do, or DC wants to do, is they want to get a stranglehold on the outlet. It's like, it's all ours now.
Right. But what I'm saying is like how Marvel movies for the most part are all on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll allow some to go and some to, you know, stay or whatever it is. And then Disney has to deal with Netflix that by some date, all of the Disney movies are going to be on Netflix, right?
Right.
Where I'm going is, where is all the Warner Brothers stuff? Like, does Warner Brothers have a deal with Hulu? Do they have a deal with Amazon? Do they have a deal with Netflix? When does that deal expire? TV over here, is movie over here? I know you're talking about the going forward stuff, but I'm talking about the past stuff as well. Because if you're launching a streaming service to do future stuff, and it's like, well, we got one thing or two things, no one's going to buy the streaming service for just those one or two things. You need to have a back catalog as well.
Well, I heard rumors back a little while back that, like, Flash, Supergirl, and Arrow were shortly going to be off the CW, not the CW, off of Netflix.
Right, because I knew they were on Netflix currently.
But there was rumors that they were getting pulled in a year or two. And now I'm wondering if that has to do with this streaming service.
And see, that's what I'm talking about is okay, so we've got, you know, the current CW stuff. Mm-hmm. What about Smallville? What about, you know, Gotham, which is over on Fox? What about the Birds of Prey TV show? What about any sort of tangentially DC-related TV show that has ever been?
The old Flash TV show from the 90s. I know exactly what you're saying.
What about the Swamp Thing show from USA, you know?
Oh, the Challenge of the Super Friends cartoons. Those two TV movies. You know what? You put all these on a service, I would be all over it.
Okay, and see, that's what I'm saying is, where are all the rights to those things? Who has them? Now, I know that the Challenge and the Roast of the Super Friends, those are owned by Warner Whole Cloth because they have... Ooh, now that's an interesting thing. So, they currently have an on-demand sort of thing called Warner Archive.
Right.
Which essentially is this, but it's not streaming.
Is it where you choose to have them burn a DVD of something and you buy it?
Yes.
I've heard of this before, yes.
Right.
Like, that's not the big guns. They're like, oh, we have Warner Brothers stuff that's always constant in production. Like, I don't know what's under the Warner Brothers. Off the top of my head, that would be big that you'd be able to go to a store and get. But this is like, oh, if we had a Warner Brothers TV show that you liked and it's not, you know, on DVD, it check this and we'll burn it for you and sell it to you.
Right. Like, I'm just looking at their site now and... First of all, the site, like, it's a lot of very old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, Todd, do you want them to burn the two seasons of the Alice spinoff Flow?
Oh, kiss my grits.
Right. Patrick Duffy's Man from Atlantis, which I think was tweeted at us the other day.
Oh, I want two copies of that.
Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
I love that show.
And then I saw... the entire run of 8 is Enough is on there.
There's not enough 8 is Enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's stuff like that. It's stuff that Warner Brothers has the rights to. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible to say, but that, like, nobody else wants.
Well, maybe they could have it on here.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. If they take all of that stuff that's on Warner Archive and filter it through whatever... sort of filter you want to, and just have that be us all part of the streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have it broken out of, like, what's the genre you want? Comic book, superhero, whatever, and there you go. That's right. Your hook, and that's your back catalog of content that you can come back and say, well, we don't got nothing, we got something. It's just, you know, not anything anyone wants.
Right, and then you can start pumping out your DC TV shows like Netflix does with the Marvel ones.
Right.
It's like, here's Captain Compass, the 13 episodes on DC Stream. Space Cabbie.
I'm trying to see what they have on the family side, because I knew they had some of the older, like, cartoons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even see them on here.
The Banana Splits?
No, not the Banana Splits.
I don't know, it could be interesting. And you know what? Maybe they could have us on as hosts.
Right.
We could be like...
Yeah, we could wrap arounds.
Oh, we could be like, you know, the old TV, you know, in your local neighborhood that would be like, on ours, it would be like the hamster races and stuff like that, dialing for dollars. We could bring back all the old gimmicks, Joe.
I'm all for about scooping other people's gimmicks.
Oh, we could do that. Let's call the DC Stream. Do you have them on the speed dial?
I got them on the blower. Let's go.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's very interesting. They have stuff. It's just, you know, not great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got a horror section that I'd be all right with, but all right.
And we don't know everything that they have. You
right,
know?
Right. And that's the thing, because there's stuff that I've seen ads for in comic books that mm-hmm. I just tried to do a search for on their site and not coming up. Now, that right. just could be that their SEO is bad, or mm-hmm. it could be 100 other things.
Right. It could be that because it's on DVD somewhere else, they don't have the rights to put it on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, who knows? Lots of interesting possibilities. Let's
right.
put it that way.
More interesting possibilities, Todd, would be Cullen Bunn, who is mm-hmm. possibly the most prolific writer in all of comic books.
Or at least since Sean Dixon.
At least, right, well, okay. Well, I don't know. Okay.
Okay.
So, it was just recently announced that through New England Comics, Cullen Bunn, along with Jimmy Z. Johnston, art by Douglas Pazwiski,
nailed it,
are going to be doing a Tick book come this summer. Now, he's co-writing the book. But this goes along with, and Todd, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and counter me.
When? Starting now?
Starting now. So, he is also
one,
currently
two.
Doing three books at Marvel. He's doing a book at Image. He's doing a book at Oni Press. He's doing a book at Aftershock. He is doing a book at a publisher called Z2 Comics. The book is called Grave Lilies.
Mm-hmm.
He is doing two books at Dark Horse. And he is doing a book at IDW. And he is doing a book at Boom as well.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, that's what's currently being published, written by Cullen Bunn on a monthly basis.
If that is all correct, good sir,
mm-hmm.
that is 11 books by Cullen Bunn.
Right. So now, granted, the Tick book doesn't come out until August. One of the Marvel books is not an ongoing, but the two of the other books, Monsters Unleashed and the X-Men book, are monthly, if not bi-monthly in the X-Men book. Harrow County for Dark Horse, that's monthly. Conan for Dark Horse, that's monthly. Micronauts for IDW, that's monthly. The new Boom book comes out this month. The Damned, which we talked about a couple weeks ago here. Regression, the Image book, which I think we're going to be talking about next week for our preview review book. But
okay,
he is, as of, at one point this summer, will have 11 books on the shelves.
Okay, I would just like to say one thing about, and just, you know, that I know about,
yes.
is that Damned book.
Yes.
Did you know that was at another company? These might be reprints of the first couple?
No. Okay. So what we read, what we did the preview review on,
right, was
that
new?
Is a new series, and at the same time, they are releasing a trade of the original series with the new series on the same day.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yes.
And you said that the X-Men book is bi-monthly. It's bi-weekly.
But you knew what I meant.
I'm just, you know, I...
It comes up three times a month.
Mistake. Sometimes you make a mistake, I'm calling you out.
I make mistakes all the time, which we'll get to later.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Either way, that's a lot of books.
That is a lot of books.
Oh, I think Chuck Dixon did that at one point.
Okay. He may have, but that's double digits, man. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, like, and, you know, I don't read everything that he puts out only because, you know, my love of Micronauts and X-Men only goes so far, but pretty much everything else that he puts out, I read, and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to be getting this Tick book.
The Tick is fun. I hope he does a really good job on it. I didn't read a whole lot of Tick back in the day, but everything that I read absolutely made me laugh out loud.
No, my endpoint for the Tick is the old cartoon.
Yep. It's a Yuletide is one of my favorite things ever. Where the Santa Clauses are just a wave of ho-ho-hoing down the street. And it's just like a big wave of, oh, it's, it had puns. I don't know if you know that. I like that.
Oh boy.
It was good.
I know you and your puns, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
So the last bit of news is less news, but more rumor and innuendo, only because you speculated on it, on your appearance on the Winter Palace with friend of the show Mark Cole this past week.
Right. Where I talk all
things. Go
check
it out if you could.
That's right, where I discuss the 12th Doctor, Gallifrey Birds, comics, a plethora of things. My ultimate commission, it's all there.
Mm-hmm. So you speculated there that with the alleged return of the Fantastic Four coming in September with the Marvel Legacy book, that the Fantastic Four is going to be brought back written by Brian Michael Bendis.
Yes, I did.
Now, granted, as you had said that, you, I think, put that thought out into the world. Because now people are starting to find pieces and threads in other books that he's currently writing, whether it be infamous Iron Man, which we'll talk about later, Jessica Jones, just random people talking about the Fantastic Four at length. Mm-hmm. And as you had mentioned, that's the last big thing at Marvel that he hasn't written.
Right.
He's done Avengers, he's done X-Men, he's done Spider-Man, Daredevil, he's done multiple events. This is the last thing.
Mm-hmm. And it would bring back the first family of Marvel to Marvel.
Right.
Which is you need somebody in that driver's seat who isn't a schlub, you know, and that he's got the pedigree for it. And he, like, the big thing for me is he's doing Infamous Iron Man. And like we said, is we'll get to stuff in there. There's things in there that I'm like, oh, you know, I could see how, you know, they can revert Doom back to the man that he was, you know. So I don't know. I'm hoping for it because I don't know if you know this. I'm a fan of the Fantastic Four, and I want to see that book back in the worst way. It's been a while since I've read an FF book, and I'm jonesing, Joe.
Right.
So
it'll be interesting to see. Now, me personally, I'm not sure. I'm gonna buy a Brian Michael Bendis Fantastic Four book.
Right.
But I don't know if he would be my first choice on it.
Who would it be? Cullen Bunn?
No.
Okay.
Jason Aaron.
Jason Aaron would be good.
Because the closest he did to a lengthy team book at Marvel was Wolverine and the X-Men, which was less a team book, and it was more an ensemble cast book, if that makes any sense.
No, I got what you're saying.
And, you know, he's done, like, an Avengers story here and an X-Men story there when they would cross over with this, that, the other thing. You know, and if you count, like, the different Thor team-up-y stuff that he's done. But, I don't know, I think I would like to see him take on the Fantastic Four.
Oh, of the two, Who would I want to see taken on more? It would probably be Jason Aaron. And there's a couple other guys that I would like to see on the book. But I just think it's, you know, it's kind of like Brian is the Geoff Johns of Marvel, and Geoff Johns is the Brian of DC. Mm-hmm. When they have those big projects and they want to bring stuff back and they want to do stuff, they know that it's going to put eyes on the page and people in the seats, and they're not going to mess it up too badly. Like, so I think that's the solid one. Plus, I really think Jason Aaron, you know, with doing the Thor books and everything he's doing, that they're leading up to something with that, and he's got his own, you know, he's got his own flow chart going of where he wants to go. But if Jason Aaron wanted it, I do think they'd give it to him because he's the up and comer. He's like the guy they don't want to lose. I've said this, you'll never see a Geoff Johns work for Marvel ever again, and you'll never see Brian Michael Bendis work for DC. So those are like your gold standards at the two companies right now.
Right.
So that's my take. But hey, I'd like Lemire on Fantastic Four too. There's a lot of great choices.
That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see. We will probably know, I would guess, what, at San Diego?
Probably they would announce it around San Diego.
Because San Diego's like midsummer. New York is too late.
Right. Yeah, because if it's coming out in Generations in any way, shape, or form, they're going to want the announcements right after that of everything that they're going to do with the book.
Right.
Every little detail they want to tell you, you know, 8 months before it comes out.
So we will see. Keep it here for any and all information about what's going to be happening with the Fantastic Four, or just DM me like some people do.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you whatever I know.
Getting in the chain.
Mm-hmm. No, DMs are different than the chain.
Oh.
Very rarely do the two intertwine.
Dem chains. Get it? DM chains? Dem chains?
You can direct message multiple people, but I don't like doing that.
I don't like when people message me at all. All
right, fair enough.
I just go get under the table and ignore them.
So I mentioned that Todd, of course, was on Mark Cole's The Winter Palace podcast. At least the version that I heard, they only talked about this show and comic books and nothing else.
I heard there's a Joe edit of the show.
But no, Todd was enjoyable on there to hear Todd in a, what can I say? Outside of my oppressive thumb.
Oh boy. Well, go ahead, let her fly.
He sticks to the script that I sent him beforehand, but I'm not there lording it over him.
Oh my goodness. I'm able to be free. I don't have the stuffiness that this show is all about.
And of course, because it was a member of the Soon to Be Named Network appearing on another show, you could find that link to that over at soontobenamednetwork.com or soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com, as well as any and all shows in the Soon to Be Named Network every time that they come alive, that they are released. My erratic sleep schedule has been allowing me to keep that more updated than I have been in the past, whether it be looking for the latest episodes of this show, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, Fresher in Parlance, who the members of those shows were both on vacation in Japan and Ukraine at the same time. That's why they haven't had an episode for the last 3 weeks.
Oh my goodness. I want to go to the Ukraine.
I'll meet you there.
All right.
Race you.
Halushki for everybody.
Profane Argument, Puzzle Warrior 3, Advocacy, Paladins of Voltron, Talkin' Gimmicks, which is back, yay, and Aim Downsides Podcast. All of these shows, anytime they come out, you can find the links to them over at soontobenamednetwork.com and soontobenamednetwork.tumblr.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can find information about them in the show note links, just like you can find out what conventions are going on this weekend. And it is an eclectic group of conventions this weekend. There is the Hudson Valley Comic Con, which is taking place in a Gold's Gym in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Oh, pump that iron.
I guess. Then there is Fan Expo Regina in Regina, Saskatoon, Canada.
Be careful I say that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With the featured guests there, both the pillars of their respective industries, William Shatner and Bret the Hitman Hart.
Oh, I hope they go at it.
And Wizard World returns, you know, as we've discussed in past episodes, kind of a shorter run this year in 2017. They're in Minneapolis, Minnesota this weekend with such featured guests as half of the Monkees.
The good half or the bad half?
Well, your mind may vary. I'm just saying half.
Okay. Which ones?
Mike Nesmith. Or no, not Mike Nesmith. Oh, good Lord. Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz.
Those are two of the good ones.
Mm-hmm. John Arrowman.
Okay.
Jenna Coleman. I don't know if they're related or not.
No, they're not.
And I tell you, this Peter Capaldi guy is making the rounds again.
You're killing me. You're killing me.
Speaking of, now this, I don't know which one is more shocking, Todd. I hope you're sitting down.
I am.
Okay. Also appearing at Wizard World Minneapolis is Charlie Sheen.
Oh, winning.
But having to cancel his appearance at Wizard World Minneapolis is Lou Ferrigno. Now, it claims that he's filming a movie.
He's filming Ragnarok, extra scenes.
And I'll give Lou the benefit of the doubt that he's filming a movie.
He's probably filming the sequel. I'm telling you, he's filming cameos for Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
He's on War World. He's a gladiator. Not World, Planet Hulk.
So, if you can't get to those conventions this weekend, what you can do is make your own convention, because this weekend is Free Comic Book Day.
Well, that's right!
Mm-hmm. The world-famous Free Comic Book Day. Find your local retailer, get your butt down to a store, get a couple of the freebies, and any comic book shop worth its salt will be having sales, price-to-move sort of things. And, you know, every publisher has something. Variety of things are mostly price-to-move. Listen to me. Free reprints of stuff, mm-hmm. jumping on points of books. Marvel has, like, the two biggies, I would guess. Like, they have their Secret Empire number 0. Or like a Secret Empire thing that actually ties into whatever's going on with Secret Empire.
Right.
That has a backup of the new Spider-Man book that comes out this summer. And they also have a preview of the Guardians of the Galaxy book that comes out this week, which is going to have a preview of the Defenders book, which also comes out this summer. So there's your newish material.
Mm-hmm.
Image also has an I Hate Image book, which is done in the style of I Hate Fairyland, which is my gold star pick of the week for Free mm-hmm. Comic Book Day. If you read I Hate Fairyland by Scotty Young, little girl trapped in, you know, a fairy tale world, and while she's stuck there for 20 years, she ages mentally but doesn't age physically, so she's this horrible, miserable person who's still a little girl, and it's a very graphic and violent book. Well, this book, instead of being in a fanciful world of fairy tales, she ends up in the Image universe with all of your favorite Image characters.
Big crossover.
Right, so I'm the most excited for that. I think their Titan is doing the preview of their Four Doctors storyline that's right. coming out this summer, but we'll have a link to all the books that are available for Free Comic Book Day in the show notes here as well.
And my recommendation for Free Comic Book Day is a bunch of them came out this week, is the Image First books. There's a bunch of number ones for reprints for a dollar.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, okay.
Like Killer Be Killed and The Fix and stuff like that. You know, you go get a free comic and then buy a comic for a dollar.
Yep.
To try it out and see how you like it. I think that's sheer brilliance. The timing of I think it's a coincidence that it's coming out the Wednesday before Free Comic Book Day, but I could be wrong. But all kidding aside, I like the idea of doing that stuff. So there's something, you know, you take your kids, it's free, and it's like, oh, well, you know, there's something for a dollar too, you know, so good idea.
And I will be there for the first time in many years.
Oh my goodness. What time are you going?
Early.
What? You don't throwing elbows with the unwashed masses?
April is indisposed this weekend for a baby shower.
Oh.
So I'm on ASA duty, and he has a birthday party in Dallas. Like, one.
Texas?
No, Dallas, PA. Come on.
Okay, just checking. You never know with the people you know.
And it's a roller skating birthday party.
Oh, you strapping on the skates, Joe?
No. The girl whose birthday it is, her mother, when I was dropping Asa off at school, we crossed paths. And she said, April told me your concerns. The parents don't have to get out there and roller skate.
Oh, you go back to your old rollery days. Where you were under yet another fake name.
I'll be running those kids through like nobody's business.
That's right.
Get out of the way, Sasquatch on wheels coming through.
Oh my god, that would be fantastic. When did Yeti learn how to roller skate?
When didn't he?
Yeti.
Yeti indeed. Alright, so... did I cover all of the stuff that we need for there? Yes, yes, yes. Oh, digital sales and freebies. Yes. So, digital sales include, did I not include this? What did I do? Did I mess these links? I think I did. Yeah, I did. Give me 2 seconds.
They were sausage links. You wouldn't mess them up.
So IDW is having a sale on stuff with art by Gabriel Rodriguez, most notable for doing the art on the Lock and Key series. Marvel, for some reason, is having a sale on Guardians of the Galaxy-related stuff. Pretty much everything from the Bendis run up in single issues and trades. Sadly, they do not have any of the Abnett and Lanning stuff, but that's understandable. DC, on the other hand, is having a sale on Bane stuff, because I guess there's a new Bane maxi series that's coming out this week.
Yes.
And it has a variety of Bane notable appearances in a variety of different books, from Checkmate to JSA to the Salvation Run miniseries. But most importantly... I implore you, listener, to either check out Batman Nightfall just for something different. You can get it for $6, the first part of it. Or something that we haven't talked about on the show in a very, very, very long time. One of the best books to be published in the mid-2000s, and that is the first 4 trades of Gail Simone's Secret Six.
So good.
Some of the best comics that have been published ever. No hyperbole. Better than Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's no easy feat. And got you get it. The first 3 trades of that for $6 a pop. And then they have like the 2 random... Suicide Squad issues that crossed over with Doom Patrol and Action Comics.
Right.
But I don't think they line up with the issues that are being collected in that trade.
I wouldn't know off the top of my head.
I'm looking now. Since I did such a poor job before.
Now I want to reread Secret Six.
Oh, yes. So do I.
That would be a good time.
It does not appear to... like, Action Comics goes to issue 29 of Secret Six, then Doom Patrol spins out of the events of issue 30 of Secret Six, and the 4 trades that they have there... Oh, well, no, they do. There you go. So, the 4 trades go up to issue 36. So, get those 4 trades, get those 2 single issues that are there, and then, sadly, they don't have that Blackest Night Suicide Squad book that also crossed over with Secret Six. You almost had a full run of Secret Six.
Oh my goodness, that's incredible.
Yep. And it's all on sale, price to move, one of the best comics runs of all time. Now, Todd, we can get into what we read from this week.
Right.
After all that, same freebies from last week, nothing changed.
Right.
Let's.
I would.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, let's start with getting it out of the way, Flash number 21.
Right.
Continuation of last week's Batman number 21, the Button storyline, this written by Joshua Williamson with art by Howard Porter. And it's so jarring to see Howard Porter's art so differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like that this is new art style, because whenever I see Howard Porter's name, I think of the art that he did on the run of JLA with Grant Morrison.
Or The Flash for a little bit.
Right, and this looks so different from that.
And we've been over why, right?
What was that?
You know why, right? I've told you the story,
oh, did
right?
Okay, yes. You go ahead and tell the story, because it's your... Yes.
He broke his hand or demolished his hand, his drawing hand, and I guess he was told he'd probably never draw with it again, so he learned how to draw with his other hand, whichever one it was. I don't know if he was a righty or lefty, because I know he was driving school bus while he was healing. So yes, he had to completely learn how to draw with his new hand. So I get maybe a slightly different style.
So we're not going to spend too much time on it because, of course, it's a continuation of an ongoing series that we recommended on the show last week. But I'm using this as an opportunity to issue a correction for a mistake that I made last week as I teased a spoiler of a mystery appearance that happened at the end of Batman number 21. That did not happen at the end of Batman number 21. It happened at the end of Hal Jordan the Green Lantern's number, whatever came out last week as well. I got the two books confused. See, when I read a bunch of books and I'm almost getting caught up on everything, and mm-hmm. I read a lot of things back to back that sometimes get jumbled, and that's what happened on the show last week.
You had me completely confused too, right. So but one last thing I do want to talk about Flash really quick is the fact that the Blue Beetle's bug was in the JLA headquarters.
Oh, that trophy room that had all that cool stuff in it.
Which I guess they're starting to say is Justice League International did happen, because during New 52 they said it didn't happen. So there's implications, and I think in the Blue Beetle book itself that they're talking that the JLI might have happened. I'm like, good for you. Rebirth fixed the most glaring omission in the DC universe.
Right, and we talked about that last week where, you know, if a bad story happens, you could just ignore it, and then eventually it will have no longer have happened.
Right.
Whereas but a good story, if you continue to ignore it, but it's a good story that everyone loves, eventually you're going to have no choice but to put it back in.
That's right. You're going to have to acknowledge it at some point. It's like the crazy uncle. You just got to, sometimes you just got to go, yep, we're related.
So we read a bunch of other stuff this past week. Where would you like to begin, sir?
Let's start with a book we both read with that you picked was Infamous Iron Man?
Right, Iron Man number 7.
Mm-hmm.
So written by the aforementioned Brian Michael Bendis with art by Alex Maleev. This is the continuation of whether or not Doom is really gone good. The cover is a little misleading, but the majority of this book is Ben Grimm the Thing on a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier interrogating the Wrecker in regards to what really happened when Doom, as Iron Man, showed up to bust up a bunch of supervillains that had gotten together.
Right, because of the fact he's running around busting up criminals.
Right. The second half of the book is Doom shows up at Ben Grimm's apartment, and Doom attempts to have a heart-to-heart talk with Ben Grimm.
Which is the meat and potatoes of this issue that, like, I could really sink my teeth into on this one.
Right.
I enjoyed the first half with the story about how Doom busts up the villain group and the lies that are kind of told and stuff like that, because even villainous Doom didn't do the things that they were claiming good Doom did. So I kind of was like, yeah, I don't really see them playing out the way it did, and they kind of give you the swerve and everything. But just I love the fact that this has set up that Doom just shows up uninvited everywhere now. And he does. He's just in Ben's apartment, and they have the talk. And so I was, as a old time Doctor Doom fan, I was taken aback by some of the revelations that Doom made to Benjamin Grimm. I was like, oh my god! Like, and young Todd would have hated it. young Todd would have been seething, but it was very well done. And in the end, I know it's all going to be ripped out from under us. It's going to change. Doom's going back to Doom at some point. So I really enjoyed this issue.
Right. This has been a really good book. This almost a standalone issue, if you will. Like, you could read this issue and not having read the previous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because they mention it all, but they don't mention it in a way that is confusing. Like the stuff right. with Doom's mother, and then of course the cliffhanger here, because someone actually does show up at the end of this issue. Mm-hmm. I didn't mix it up with another book, or imagine it.
Right. No, I'm looking at it here, you're right.
Right. But this time he doesn't show up. He shows up to Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And things are going to get really interesting.
Go ahead.
Especially if this is going to be the book where the Return of the Fantastic Four spins out of.
And I would just like to say, I want to give big, big props to Maleev for giving me old-timey Ben Grimm in a trench coat and fedora.
Of course.
That's his, like his disguise. Like, we always said, like, nobody notices the big rock man in the fedora and trench coat. I just love it. And, like, the shots in it of, like, you know, him with the hat down over his face and everything. It just looks really, really good.
Very inconspicuous, you would say.
Yes.
Right.
It's the way I dress when I want to go out and not be noticed from the show.
You put on a shirt that has color.
I've done that to throw people off. I could walk through a room juggling, like, flaming batons. But if my shirt isn't black, they're like, where's Todd?
Who is this man?
That's right. What have you done with Todd?
So what's the next one we want to talk about?
Let's go with... I'll go with Scarlet Spider.
Now, I did not read this.
Right.
So this one's on you.
Yes, this is the new Ben Reilly, The Scarlet Spider, number one by Peter David and Mark Bagley.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not read what was the thing that led into this. Joe, you know better than I do.
The Clone Conspiracy.
The Clone Conspiracy. To me, this book was, to start off, was an equal mix of intrigue and confusion because... The Ben Reilly, you find out, is in Vegas, and he's not going by the name Ben Reilly, he's going by the name Peter. And he's more like Deadpool than Spider-Man in this, because he seems to be crazy, and he's seeing a version of himself in the hoodie that with sleeves, and because he's stolen a costume off a cosplayer, so he has a whole new costume. He's not wearing the hoodie with the sleeves ripped off. Which kind of upset me. But so he's having these inner dialogues with that person, and he's trying to find the life that he had before. Like, he's running around saving people, and he's like, is your name Gwen, or is your name, like looking for an old girlfriend or lover? And then he's like, old people, is your name anything like May, like protect you? So he's really crazy. And then I find out he's also got another persona that's arguing with the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider voice in his head, that it's the Jackal. He was the Jackal at one point.
That's correct.
Okay, so all that's going on while someone named Kane, who's also scarred like Ben Reilly, is looking for. So
also correct.
Right. So while I like this book, it looked good. It's Mark Bagley. He does solid work. I was very confused on who all these characters were and why they were going after each other. But I did like the whole thing. He's in a casino and he finds this old lady who's addicted to gambling, whose name is June, who's close enough to May. And he wants to, like, protect her from thugs who are robbing the casino. It's a weird eclectic mix of, like, insanity and just Spider-Man stuff. But I want to try, I don't love it, but I want to try it more because I jumped in feet first into something I don't know, and I don't want to judge it on not understanding all the characters, if that makes any sense.
It does. I was afraid. So the book gets announced in the middle of clone conspiracy before there was the reveal of who the Jackal was.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I had discussed this on the show when you had said that you were interested in getting the book, mostly because you're a Peter David fan. We had speculated that this is going to replace Spider-Man 2099, but Spider-Man 2099 is still coming out for the time being, at least. And then the short version of what happened is, after, at the end of the original Clone Saga, when it was revealed that Ben Reilly was in fact the clone,
mm-hmm.
and Norman Osborn was the one who was really behind everything, and Ben Reilly sacrifices himself to save Peter and Mary Jane, and he disintegrates into a pile of dust,
mm-hmm.
the Jackal gets that pile of dust, uses it to make Ben Reilly again, and then essentially gives him the Doomsday treatment.
Right.
Where he just continually kills him over and over again in different and varying ways until those ways can no longer harm him.
Mm-hmm.
Then Ben Reilly becomes so powerful from that and crazy from having been killed many, many times. He comes out, kills Miles Warren the Jackal. He then becomes the Jackal. Then he takes over all the cloning stuff. And that's how Clone Conspiracy happens. The clone degeneration thing was supposed to kill anyone that he had created as clones that he'd lied to, said weren't clones, but they really were clones. And there was a super perfect body that he had made for himself that Dr. Octopus stole, which is a whole other kettle of fish. And now, after his grand scheme had failed, he's now insane and basically a criminal.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, because he's on the run, and he's afraid to use his powers in public, because then Peter will know that he's still alive. And then on top of that, there's this casino owner whose son was one of the clones that he swapped out. And so he's at her casino, and she finds him, and she's like, well, you did all this, and it hurt more than everything. So that whole plot where there's swapped out clones that he was blackmailing people with, let me just put it this way. It's a lot to take in issue one.
Right.
Not have read anything. And he seems too close to a Deadpool carbon copy to me, where he's having these voices in his head and he's doing all these wacky things. And I'm like, if I wanted to read Deadpool, maybe I just read Deadpool.
True.
But I know I'm a big Peter David fan, so I'm willing to give him maybe two more issues. And then if it's not up to my taste, then I'm out.
Yeah, once it was revealed that he was going to be, that he was the villain of the book, and then he was going to be crazy, and he was going to be the lead of his own book, I'm like, there's no way I could read this book.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I love Mark Bagley's art, yeah, I can't.
Right.
So last but not least was a request for us to read, and to add to the confusion, so I was unaware that DC was still doing this. So the book that we read was Scooby-Doo Team-Up number 25.
Mm-hmm.
The print version is issue 25. The digital version is number 49 and 50.
Right.
There was a time where DC would do this, where they would have two or three digital first releases of a book and then put it out in print sometime later.
They're still doing it. You don't know about it.
Right. They're still doing it. I was unaware that they were doing it with the Scooby-Doo books, let alone other stuff. For some reason,
Injustice Gods Among Us is another one.
Right. I knew they were still doing it with that. And the stuff that's like the Batman 66 stuff.
And the Wonder Woman 77, I think.
Right. Like those nostalgia books. I didn't know they were doing them with the Johnny DC books.
Right.
So let me just read to you the synopsis for this issue. Written by Sholly Fish, with art by Dario Brizzola. The generation gap turns into a generation gasp when the aging hipsters of Karma Corners get locked up by the ghosts of their ancestors, who are fed up with the hijinks of their meddling kids. Even with the help of Green Lantern and Green Arrow, can Scooby and the gang crack the mystery of the ghosts and reunite the town?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is just the description of the first half of the issue.
Right.
The second half of the issue, not in description of this. So, essentially what this is, you know, because it's two digital issues put together in one print issue, it definitely reads like two separate stories. Mm-hmm. The first one is definitely a Scooby-Doo story that just happens to have Green Lantern and Green Arrow in it, whereas mm-hmm. the second story is a Green Lantern, Green Arrow story that just happens to have Scooby-Doo in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought this was fun. You know, it's not like something that I feel like I have to buy every month or whenever the digital thing has come out or whatever it is.
Right.
But, you know, I got a chuckle out of it. I thought the art was really nice looking, very crisp, very, you know, animation style. Like, as I'm reading it, I could picture this being an episode of a cartoon that would air on TV somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the bit that read more like a DC superhero comic as opposed to the parts that read more like a Scooby-Doo comic.
Right, and I think they misspoke when they said hipsters. I think they meant hippies.
Right, it says hipsters in the thing, and that's why I wanted to read it.
I was like, I think they meant hippies, and because hippies and hipsters, two different things.
Right.
But the thing that I loved about the book was the old jokes about, like, the hard-traveling heroes stuff and how, you know, Ollie was the leftist Avenger of the downtrodden and everything, and his speeches were killing me. And then you don't watch the show. There are about 1,000 Arrow Gags TV show in there.
Well, right off the bat, where he says you failed the city 1,000 times.
Exactly.
Right.
And the bit where they're going like, well, you know, could be one of Green Lantern's villains, and they just read off all the villains. And then he's like, well, what about Arrow's villains? Like, well, who are they? Deathstroke? No. Titan's villain. What about Ra's al Ghul? Batman's? And they're going down the list. And they're all villains that are on the TV show, and none of them are his, like, from the book. And I was, as I was reading, I was legitimately crying because I'm like, all right, that's sharp satire if you're in the know.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I'm like, that's really good. It was making me laugh. And there were little things that I know from, like, the Green Arrow and Green Lantern hard traveling hero stuff. But this makes me want to read. There's one in the previews now. Scooby-Doo team up, and it's probably out digitally now or will soon be digitally, is it's Scooby-Doo's grandfather teaming up with Jonah Hex. And I'm like, I hope the kill count is high so I get a few more bodies for
execution. That would have to count for executions.
It is a book. I count the Brave and the Bold ones that were the old cartoons and stuff like that, but there's a new one coming out, and I'm looking forward to it.
Let me see, is it out yet?
Like I said, digitally, but I know it's... Because I want the copy for my collection.
Of course.
Because I have all the Hex appearances. I have an existential problem.
You don't have to buy, like, 6 copies, like one to put in one box, one to put in another box?
No, I just have a Jonah Hex box.
Okay.
Now, if he appears in something that, like, if he just happens to magically show up in Flash, and I'm collecting Flash... Then I'll buy 2, one to go in the Flash box and one to, like he was in the Alan Moore run of Swamp after Alan Moore did the book when Veitch did it. So I have a Swamp Thing issue for the Jonah Hex box and one for the Swamp Thing box. But then when he was in the Justice League of America in the 70s, I don't have a run of that. So I just put that in the Hex box. See how my brain works on that stuff, Joe?
Oh, I'm frightened.
Oh, please, look who's talking, Triplicate. Triplicate Lass over there.
Triplicate Lass. Hey, you're not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it would appear as though those are not out digitally.
Soon, probably, then.
When will then be soon?
Now.
So it looks like the second part of the digital version comes out the same day the two parts are collected in print.
Oh, so that's a good idea then.
And it appears as though it comes out monthly. So the first part of the Jonah Hex thing should be out in 2 weeks digitally.
Okay. I'm all confused. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Oh, stop saying that. Nobody knows what that means.
You will someday.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was a lot that we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern Standard Time or so, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your house, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, be ready, have enough bags and backs, and to see if your shop has the lenticular Secret Empire ones. So, with the pull post, we do two things. One, we keep track of how many books we are getting throughout the course of the year, and breaking them down by publisher, so we can see, come the end of the year, where most of our money is going to. Secondly, we attempt to guess what's most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd still has the lead of one over me with eight correct guesses, and I have seven correct guesses.
Mm-hmm. And I go first, right?
Correct.
So I'm looking at your list, and I think the book your son's looking forward to most is Angry Birds Comics Gameplay number 3.
That's correct, but this is not his show.
I'm just saying. Though if he did a run in, all the people would swoon. So I'm looking at yours. Is the book you're looking forward to most All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 1?
It is All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 1.
Yes.
Now for you, I have to ask questions about your list.
Okay, I will try to Roker face them.
Okay. Obviously, Absolute Preacher Volume 2 does not count.
There's no new stuff in there, but that is the thing I'm looking forward to most.
Of course.
But it doesn't count.
What is Guardians of the Galaxy Mother Entropy?
It is, a weekly. I'm not really sure on that, but it's, I think, a three- or four-part story written by Jim Starlin and drawn by Alan Davis.
Is that the thing you're most looking forward to this week?
Yes, it is.
There you go. Because there's so much Guardians of the Galaxy stuff coming out, I'm not sure which is which. Like, there's the one that ties into the Telltale Games thing, and there's one that ties mm-hmm. into this, and there's the one that ties in the movie, and there's a, you know.
There are three that are out.
Right.
When I was at the shop pulling my books, you know, because I don't have that stupid pull list in triplicates, there were three, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, I'm not getting any of these books. And then I looked down, and it was like, covered Jim Starlin. I was like, done. You know,
yep.
I'm not a big fan of his Guardian work, because he's done them a few times, but it is Jim Starlin and, you know, sight unseen cosmic characters by Jim Starlin.
Right. And this, you know, obviously it's a new writer, new creative team coming on. I know we've talked about it before. Many people have maligned this run of Guardians of the Galaxy by Brian Michael Bendis. While not his strongest work, it was still very enjoyable, even though it did meander a little bit while it was trying to get caught up or stay current or whatever with Civil War II. Nonetheless, I'm eager to check out the new book because it'll get me hyped up for the movie that's coming out this weekend, which really is the thing that I'm most looking forward to coming out this week. But it is not an actual physical comic book.
And it wasn't on your list, so.
Right. So. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I might go see that too.
There you go. And I'm sure we'll be discussing it on the show next week.
Right.
While you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out past episodes of the show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, past pull posts, past anything that we've ever done on the internet. It's all collected there in one handy-dandy spot for your perusing pleasure. Also, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to click on that little button there that says Store, where you can purchase a shirt or stickers with the fancy logo done by our good friend and DC Comics artist extraordinaire, Tom Derenick, who, as I understand, will be doing stuff at our local comic book shop this weekend as part of Free Comic Book Day.
Yes. He'll be probably doing sketches and definitely signing stuff.
Definitely stuff. Also, while you're over at longboxheroes.com, if you do not want to support us in other ways, a way that you could support us is purchasing anything that you need, anything that your heart desires through our Amazon click-through at the top of the page. Will not cost you anything extra, but we get a little bit of a kickback for any and all purchases that you make through the Amazon link. Now, I'm sure you listen to other podcasts, and they talk about bounties and Amazon Musics and Amazon Primes, and I'm sure we get some sort of kickback for that. You don't have to do that. Just any purchase that you make makes me happy, makes Todd happy. And isn't that the most important thing at the end of the day? Make sure that Todd is happy.
I 100% agree.
Right. So, notable purchases from the Amazon click-through this week was someone had purchased Toki Doki leggings. Todd, are you familiar with the Toki Doki art thing?
No.
Toki Doki are these like little super deformed characters. Todd, are you aware of Tsum-Tsums?
No.
All right. They look remarkably similar to what Tsum-Tsums are, but they're kind of like cutesy, super deformed little people. Yeah, they're very popular. And leggings. Everyone loves leggings. Granted, they're not LuLaRoe leggings. Again, not a sponsor of the show. But it's just me making one step closer to making my line of man leggings.
Oh.
Someone also purchased art portfolio display books.
I like the sound of that.
Uh-huh. Pretty fancy. It's like for comic book art. So hopefully whoever is doing that will be contributing to a Todd's Art Attack sometime in the near future.
Right. And we did have a Todd's Art Attack this week.
We did?
Yes, we did. You even tweeted it out.
I'm acting surprised. This is part of the acting portion of the show.
Oh, you always nail it. You get me every time you act. But it was a Jose Luis Garcia Lopez Batman Hulk page from that DC Marvel crossover back in the day.
Oh, yeah, Batman, sure.
Where Batman shunks him in the stomach so he could suck in the gas and get all passed out and stuff. But I don't know. It looked pretty good.
It looks cool. I like the fact that it's a yellowed page that lets you know that it's old.
And it has words on it. And not that crazy guy on the Twitters. These are actually words. Mm. Word balloons. So yeah. I miss word balloons on art pages. So.
I just miss original art.
You should buy some.
Nah, it's too much of my blood these days. I had a window of maybe 6 months and then I'm done.
I was looking at original art this week and yikes in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Listen, you're a fancy gentleman in training, so you can go nuts.
I can go nuts. Who needs credit?
Exactly. So last but not least, before we get into Flash TV show talk, we're going to talk about a Flash comic book. This would be Flash number 182 from the Geoff Johns run. On the book, I think this issue came out sometime in the mid-2000s, and is a Captain Cold solo story. So, during this run on the Flash, when Geoff Johns would have a big storyline end, he would always do kind of like a one-off issue, which would be like a little like day in the life, origin, whatever would have you, of one of the Rogues. And I'm not sure if this was the first or the second one of these that he did.
I think it might have been the second. I think the first one was Weather Wizard.
Right.
But I'm not 100% sure on the order.
So we talked about it a little bit last week, but this essentially is Captain Cold's origin story and how it is tying into a mission he is currently going on for his own personal satisfaction and what has led him to make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is one of my favorite comic books of all time.
This is one of those books that is literally, and I don't do this like with hyperbole, we say, is a perfect book from cover to cover. It is, shall I tick off the ways that this book is perfect?
Go for it.
Cover. A beautiful Brian Bolan cover. One of my, maybe my favorite Brian Bolan cover. Don't know, haven't seen them all. Two. Written by Geoff Johns at his peak. An amazing story. The character, Captain Cold, one of the best. Drawn by Scott Collins. And I have to give big props because we don't discuss this stuff much. But let me find it. James Sinclair as the artist, or as the colorist.
Yes.
Because of the colorist in this book. It does not, it's not the book that it is. The blue hues that are throughout this whole book, and it's funny to read a book called The Flash with almost no reds whatsoever throughout the book.
Right, it's amazing. The few times that The Flash is in this book in flashbacks, pun intended,
mm-hmm.
He is colored in a very muted red style. That's right. Barely red.
Right. And at the time, the beautiful thing about this book was with the regular issues was there was no red in the books at all other than the Flash. Do you remember that?
Yes.
To make him stand out. That was the plan. Well, to make everything in this book blue, not only makes it stand out from the other issues at the time, but works really well for the story being told because it's Captain Cold. It's a sad story. It makes you feel chilly as you're reading it. And it's great. It's just, you know, avenging the death of his sister who was all the way back in a Mark Waid story. Which was with the Chilblain where she was giving it to, she was giving a copy of the gun to as Leonard Snart called them, himbos, which made me laugh when I read that again. And he ended up killing her. And back then we actually thought he died. And this was a retelling of the story that no, he got away. And it's Leonard going to kill the killer of his sister, all the while telling of their youth and time growing up together. It's the perfect story. There's nothing bad about this book. The only small nitpick I have is rereading it is when the guy gives him the Captain Cold visors. I'm kind of like, that's a little wonky. Everybody had them. But the reasoning is like, oh, the muzzle flashes from the gun. It'll stop the... I was like, whatever. He looks great with them on. But
and they got the radio in the earpiece.
That I like that he added, but the whole thing for like, oh, if they're shooting, the least of your problems is their muzzle flashes. But otherwise, perfect.
I echo all of your sentiments, and as much as I haven't read this book in quite some time, but I do love it very much. I could nitpick it, but the things that I would nitpick about this, as you had mentioned, this was peak Geoff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
So there was kind of storytelling tropes that he did here that would later become more or less his calling cards.
Right.
But they weren't his tropes yet because this may have only been the first or second time he had done them.
Right.
Now, if you've read other Geoff Johns stuff and then you read this, you would be like, oh, this is like that thing that he did in the Green Lantern issue, or this is the thing that he did in the JSA issue. Because he does certainly have certain things that he leans on to tell his stories.
But they work.
But they work, right. And this being the first time that, like I said, the first or second time that he used them, now having read so much Geoff Johns since this, reading this again, I'm like, oh, okay, I see where he kind of reused this thematic thing before.
May I ask, like, what?
Does that put
you on the spot?
You've got the abusive father. You've got the parental figure or whoever is that comes in to save the day. Who it's not important that we see their face because it's told from the children's point of view to tell the story of, you know, how time has passed and he's starting to forget that part. How it's a little bit on the nose that his grandfather drives an ice truck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would later lead him to become Captain Cold, you know, and like that little bit that was thrown in there. Johns would always do those sort of kind of nods to a flashback thing of like, oh, it's not that it's going to pay off, but it's going to be a secret inspiration that you, the reader, know along with me.
But you know what? I do like that of the I know what you're saying.
I'm not saying that I don't like these things.
No. I'm defending it even though you're not throwing you under the bus. But I like the idea of he becomes more like he says, I feel good when I'm cold. Mm. It takes me back. And I know this. It's not like I'm talking down to you. But it's like, I don't know. It makes Captain Cold like loving the freeze gun, even the cold, not the freeze gun. Don't never call it a freeze gun. The cold gun even more. There's something about it. He's like, my happiest memories were when I was in that stupid, you know, ice truck freezing to death. But here it is. But then again, he did use it again with Heatwave, where it's like, oh, I never want to be cold. I'm only happy when I'm hot because
right.
I got stuck
and
in
that,
a...
that's, and that's the sort of thing that I'm talking about. Again, not a bad right. thing, but it fits into these characters.
Right.
I know, the I'm only just... other thing, and I guess a 2016-17 retcon of Captain Cold's personality, I guess, that isn't thematic with this book, whereas most everything else in this book kind of lines up with the current versions, plural, of Captain Cold. And then, of course, when he's having the fight with Chilblain, Chilblain has the knockoff cold gun. Chilbane is using all sorts of puns as he's fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain Cold's like, I have those puns. And it's just like, here's all the things that he's doing to him to fight him. But, you know, Captain Cold in the TV show is puntastic.
You like puns when he does them.
Oh, but listen, Wentworth Miller could pretty much do anything he wants as far as I'm concerned. Especially right. when he's dressed up as Captain Cold. So, like, obviously now it's a different Captain Cold. So that part, it's not like I'm like, oh, they should change this in the book. I'm like, oh, it's a different Captain Cold now.
I think they need to have Wentworth Miller getting more female friends the way he does in this book.
Oh, yes.
Because that's the one thing that I do love that Geoff Johns totally did with Captain Cold and made him completely unapologetic about it, is like, he's like, I buy my women, I drink a lot, I gamble a lot, I just like to steal, and he is straightforward about it. There's like no, like, oh, there's a stigma around this, because I don't even have time. And it just makes him more, in a book about a guy who has a cold gun to fight a guy who runs at the speed of light, it makes him more real to me in some bizarre, strange way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, a great book, a perfect book.
I would certainly
Joe's
say so.
Ripping it apart, even though you're ripping it apart.
Yes.
I'm busting.
This
no,
book needs to be taken down a few pegs. I like it too much.
Right.
I have to destroy the things that I like.
That's society.
So, you have a book for us to discuss next week.
Right. I'm going to throw a book out that I think you're going to be surprised that I picked, Joe.
All right.
Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
I am.
I'm picking Sam and Twitch 14 by Brian Michael Bendis, who we've mentioned a ton on this show, and drawn by Clayton Crane.
Hmm, interesting pick.
Have you ever read that book, John?
I certainly have, but I probably haven't read it since it was printed however long ago it was. Issue 14, you say?
Yep, the year 2000, I believe it was. In the year 2000!
Any particular reason this issue?
Because I did not read much Brian Michael Bendis back in the day. But someone gave me this run or this issue. I don't remember which altogether. And the story stuck with me for a long time. It's one of those that when I talk with certain fans, it's like, do you remember? It's called Stupid Laws and Eggs. And it's always the egg issue of Sam and Twitch. And people are like, yep. So that, to me, that defines what a truly, almost a truly good book can be. Do you know what right. I mean? So that's the reason.
All right. I'll be looking forward to revisiting that here for next week's show.
Yes.
All right. So that covers the main part of the show. The last bit of business that we have is to discuss last week's episode of The Flash. So if you did not watch or do not care or what have you, we bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to episode 344. And we'll give you a few seconds here while we get into Flash TV mode.
Right. And even though you said it's going to be last, we're going to get wiggy with it.
Oh, boy. Nah, 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 nah.
No?
So, Flash is back from a little bit of a hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
Barry decides, for some arbitrary reason, that if he travels to 2024, he will be able to figure out Savitar's identity, come back to our time, and save Iris.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd, wouldn't you know who won the pony? Mm-hmm. When things are not what they seem 7 years in the future. Because when Iris dies, he's not nice to everyone.
What?
Also, the top is a fantastic jacket.
Right, and the Mirror Master's still looking snazzy.
Right. Still trying to portray himself as some sort of fakey, phony Gindaloon.
All I want is an orange and green suit with a gun. That's what I'm looking forward.
Sadly, I do not think that we're ever going to get that. And also, because they were traveling to an alternate timeline, as I watched this episode, I held my hand up in a certain way so that I wouldn't see the credits.
Mm-hmm.
So just in case they throw in special guest star Wentworth Miller,
mm-hmm.
or anyone else, I wouldn't know and see the actor's name and be like, oh, this guy's going to make an appearance in it.
Right. But you know who directed this episode, I'm pretty sure?
Who?
Was HR.
I see it here.
It's HR.
That's why he gets off such a plum role later in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
As the fantasy writer doing a public reading at the coffee shop that he now owns. Because, of course, from the earth that he was at, there is no coffee, so of course he would take over the coffee shop.
That's right.
And how all the ladies wanted him.
All the guys want to be him, and all the ladies want to be with him.
So, what did you think of this episode?
I really liked this episode. I thought it looked good. I thought, you know, it had some real punches. But then I sat down and thought about it.
Okay.
And it all unraveled for me.
Uh-oh.
Because it kind of broke a rule that they had set up.
What?
It
the
like,
show
okay.
plays fast and loose with time travel, Todd?
Yes, right. Now, I'm a stickler for how time travel really works. But no, it's
right,
one
you
of
don't
those
like wobbles. Is that what you always say?
What?
You don't like when time travel wobbles?
Yes.
Is that the thing you always say?
Yes. But no, it's kind of like, oh, I'm Barry, and I've decided, thanks to talking to Jay, I will never disrupt time again. But I'm going into the future to get answers, so it's not the same. But future Barry goes, I'll tell you what could happen. Like, my whole history of... we discussed changing time is a bad thing. Future Barry is just like, oh, I'll help you. Here, take this back 7 years before it happens. And I'm kind of like, oh, it's really more changing the timeline. But in the end, I really don't think I'm calling my shot. Now Iris is dying, like for reals and for trues. But so he's not going to change the timeline. I don't know. It was weird to me. And at this point, I really don't care who Savitar is. I have a guess. But I don't care who Savitar is anymore in the Transformer armor.
Now, I'll be interested to see who your guess is. Because I know a follower of the show, fan of the show, Wednesday Comics on Twitter. That's the account they'll always do those things from. They did a poll of who everyone thinks it's going to be. And I didn't check the results, of course, because I don't want it to be spoiled. But the interesting choice of Ronnie Raymond is who Savitar is.
That's my choice.
Okay.
And I don't have any, like, you know me, I don't go looking for spoilers, but when the suit opens up and she's like, oh, I'll do whatever you say.
Right, I'm and like, that's the kind of tip-off to it.
It's like, yeah, who else is it going to be? All the people she's trying to kill? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, it's, what, a different version of Sisko? She tried to kill him. Is it a different version of, you know, all these different people? I don't know. But Raymond, who... showed up in a dream sequence this season to remind the viewer that he existed is always like a story type tip off to me. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, we got to throw this out there so you remember it at some point. And then it'll come back later. So I think it's Ronnie personally.
Not a terrible guess. The Savitar look in this looks very much like the Death Storm that they did in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the practical effect of the Savitar armor. I love the practical effect of the Savitar armor. But when they did the scene where, like, the armor comes off him so the person inside could stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Very suspect CGI there.
Wait a minute. Are you saying any of the CW shows would have subpar stuff?
Oh, my goodness. So, I like the episode... of course they're going to travel through time. Of course they're going to break their own rules. If you're watching the show at this point and those are the things that are upsetting you, then why are you still watching the show?
It's not. It's the fact I don't hate the show. I just think this is the weakest of the seasons. And because I'm a Savitar fan and they've completely, I just think, gotten so far away from how cool Savitar was that it kind of ruins it for me. Do you know what I mean?
But listen, they could very easily be like, end of the season, it's revealed that whoever is Savitar, and then we reveal that this isn't the real Savitar, Todd. This is the person who was inspired to do all these things by the real Savitar, our villain for next season, and then they do him kind of the way that you know him from the comic books.
Okay, I never want to hear you complain again. I never. I'm calling you out right now. Right. Whenever I go, oh, they can do this and that. No, they can't. It's all ruined. It's all done. Blah, 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 blah. I can never get the preacher that I want.
That's correct.
So I go, well, I don't like this Savitar. Well, I get the proverbial wait and see from you.
One character three seasons into a TV show, as opposed to the entire fabric of the comic book just flushed down the toilet.
Nope, you're playing fast and loose. You're playing fast and loose with what you want right now.
Right.
I'm totally calling you out on this.
I don't have the same attachment to Savitar that you obviously do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fine with this iteration of Savitar, whatever. I'm saying these things as a way to hopefully placate you.
Right.
And if you're getting this hot about this, then I don't think we can watch and talk about Preacher on the show, because that's so far gone, there's no coming back, where, you know, this is a show that regularly deals with time travel. Like, why can't there be multiple versions of everyone? There already is.
Because I've already done 1,000 ways that Preacher could get back on track, and you're like, nope.
You haven't told me a single one. You've just said, you know, it was fine that they wasted the entire first season to tell the first issue of the story. I'm okay with this.
Oh, my God. You are so, oh, my God. I don't know if you can tell. I'm legitimately hot right now.
Do I need to remind you that NFL's not real as well? Or?
Oh, my God. Hitting all the nerves today, Joe.
Right.
All the nerves.
All right. So I enjoyed this. There's a couple more episodes left this season. I think we got, like, what, 3?
Yeah, I think it's something like that.
Right. Let me see.
Don't look. You'll get spoiled.
No, I'm good. I'm... There's 4 episodes left. Oh, my goodness. God. What am I going to do with myself?
Just watch it until Preacher comes out?
Right. Of course. So is there anything else we need to say about The Flash here?
No, I think we're good. I think everything I've wanted to say I've said, Joe.
All right. At least
on a show that's not After Dark.
Okay. So thanks to everyone for listening to episode 344 of Long Box After Dark. For Todd, this is Joe. We'll catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Ooh.